You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio for our All Cardinals show. This is your host, Jess Root, on the line with Seth Cox, and we are here to talk about the Arizona Cardinals' first real regular season, real football game, a 31-19 victory over the New Orleans Saints at University of Phoenix Stadium in Week 1. Cardinals are 1-0. They are tied atop the NFC West with the St. Louis Rams, who defeated the Seattle Seahawks 34-31 in overtime, and also the San Francisco 49ers, who ended Week 1 slate of games with a 20-3 victory over the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, the 49ers didn't look like a complete dumpster fire, so that makes things interesting for the first round of games of the schedule. In terms of what they have, we've got kind of run down in some of the stats. Carson Palmer threw for over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, was not sacked. The Cardinals as a team ran for 120 yards, allowed only 54 yards rushing to the New Orleans Saints, who did have over 400 yards of offense. However, Drew Brees threw for over 350 yards. However, about 150 of those came to running backs on dump-offs and screens. He was intercepted once. Alex Okafor had a pair of sacks. Rashad Johnson again with the interception. It was an overall pretty solid game. You saw a touchdown run from Andre Ellington. Ellington did get hurt, as we're going to talk a little bit more about that. He injured his knee and could miss this week up to 3 weeks. He could be out with a sprained PCL in his right knee is the diagnosis. And we got to see a little bit of the explosiveness of David Johnson, who after a 43-yard kickoff return, then touched the ball for the first time in his NFL career on offense, and it only turned into a 55-yard touchdown reception where he caught the ball, which would have been a first down, and then just outran everyone else to the end zone. So we have the Cardinals, who are 1-0. They will go on the road to play the Chicago Bears. And today, if you're going to be listening to this via download, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio recording on a Tuesday evening, as is our typical night for recording our All Cardinals show. And we've got Seth Cox on the line. Seth, how are you doing tonight? And how did it feel to have meaningful, not just football, but football that actually counts for something?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was enjoyable to watch. Got out fast and then kind of did the typical get into a rut, but then they finished really strong, and it was an enjoyable game to watch, and fun to have it all back in what looks like is the best division of football still. Not just might be, but is the best division of football.
Yes, you can definitely take a look and say, wow, I mean, if it weren't for the fact that the Rams and the Seahawks were playing one another, we could be looking at a division with everyone with a win. It makes things interesting. In some former Cardinals news, we actually saw a little bit of movement happening. Last week we talked about Logan Thomas landing with the Miami Dolphins. He actually ended up being cut before the Week 1 game. However, he was re-signed on Tuesday to the practice squad. They had to make a move as they as they promoted running back Jonas Gray, so they had to move somebody. And there were a couple other interesting moves. Timmy Hightower, former running back for the Arizona Cardinals, was on the Saints roster last week, then cut just before week one. He was re-signed to the team on Tuesday. That, and another one for the Bearskin coming up. Linebacker Sam Acho, who left the Cardinals this last offseason in free agency, signed a one-year deal with the Chicago Bears. He had been cut at the end of last week and was re-signed again. Those two moves reek of salary cap manipulation because both of them are vested veterans in the NFL. And by cutting them before week one, it made it so that their salary is not guaranteed for the entire season. They bring them back. They pay them as long as they're on the roster. When they cut them, they don't have to pay them. If any vested veteran on the roster for week one games, their salary is guaranteed for this season. So it just looked like a little bit of salary cap manipulation there. That means we will get to see, ideally we'll get to see them at least on special teams. Looks like Sam Acho will be on the field when the Cardinals play. But let's talk about the game. We're going to talk about the good and not so good. But the truth is, there's a lot of good in that game. Seth, what stood out to you, the most of the good? What were the biggest goods that you saw out of that game?
For me, it started with the offensive line. They had some pass protection struggles still. But, you know, like I said, I think it was last week. It might have been earlier. But like I said before, what the Saints lack in secondary and pretty much everywhere but the edge players, you know, they make up for in edge players. And I thought that was a good test for Earl Watford. And, you know, he got beat a little bit early, but he really settled in. Kakaha, you know, we've seen Jared Valdir have some struggles this year, or in the preseason and stuff. And he had a couple again yesterday, but overall, from a just pass protection standpoint, you have to like what they did yesterday. It allowed Palmer to settle in and make good throws because, you know, as we saw in the Oakland game, when he loses his footing, he loses his accuracy, and he was on point for, you know, the most part yesterday. And then in the running game, something that has been overlooked since the Mike Iupati injury, but Ted Larson's the best offensive lineman on this football team right now.
Stop it! Just stop that. You can't say that. That's awful. No, but good. That's actually really good. Ted Larson being effective now. I wonder how much of that was how much of his struggles last year or his the struggles that we perceived because he was a guy. I mean, obviously the coaching staff trusted him. I wonder how much of that was in being in a new offensive system. Now in year two, he's kind of gotten the hang of things because he was pretty not good at left guard last year.
I think that's more what it is. I think, you know, we've seen the bad of him, and now all of a sudden there's not really any bad, and there's good. So, you know, while he's still probably just an average lineman in the league, I think that the difference in his play from last year to this year makes it seem like a greater jump. But, you know, I'm not really kidding. Like, he has done a really nice job, and I would say consistently has been the one guy that you haven't seen get beat in pass protection. Watford and Valdir really did a lot in the run game yesterday and then Cooper pulling. But, I thought everybody on offensive line played well for the most part. And I think offensively, the fact that they just came out, like I said, fast and were able to dominate, such a strong word, because, you know, the wheels kind of came off after the two touchdowns. But They for those two possessions, they really did dominate. I mean, they looked basically unstoppable for those first two possessions. And I know that's not something that you can, you know, carry through a whole game or even a season, but 31 points and you know, all the weapons that we saw on display. I think you have to be excited about what this offense can be if they can continue to have that consistency. And I thought the second half and the adjustment to rely more on the run game really kind of led to everything just gelling, and what that, you know, what the outcome ended up being was because of that.
What you got to see was basically a continuation of the last 16 starts for Carson Palmer, where the offense, you know, Bruce Arians, for as much as an offensive guru and mastermind as people claim him to be, and you've written about it, the numbers of his offense have been very pedestrian. I mean, not bad, but they're never elite. They're always middle of the road. But they have an offensive system that's explosive. It's a big play threat. But if you look at what Carson Palmer at quarterback has done for the Cardinals, I believe, of the last 16 games, they're averaging, I mean, last year I think it was 26 points a game, and that dropped down, what was it, to the mid, what, 19, 18, or 16 with Lindley, with Drew Stanton, and then with Ryan Lindley even dropped even further. And it's just that having Carson Palmer under center just makes a world of a difference and enhances all of those threats that they have. Andre Ellington, until he got hurt, he looked like the Andre Ellington we saw a couple of years ago, where it wasn't just negative, negative, or one yard, negative yard, and then 80. He was getting, there was 1 yard, 2 yard, 1 yard, which have you hit, you get across the board in the league, but then he was popping off 18, he was hitting 10, and you got to see the explosive Ellington, and of course he got hurt, so that's another thing to be concerned about, but he got 11 touches in the game in 3.5 quarters, and then you got to see Chris Johnson, which in the limited amount of time he was on the field before Ellington left, he really wasn't very effective. But what did we see once Chris Johnson got in there and was getting a healthy dose of touches? He was effective. And to see, and we will take this with a grain of salt, yes, the Saints' defense is not great. They do have good, in Cameron Jordan, they have a very good edge player. In Kikaha, they have a very potentially good edge player. But they did, their secondary was, I mean, I I joked about when I wrote for Canal Street Chronicles, the answer, I called them trash. And I'm not usually as harsh as that, but they sort of are when they have two, like, one, they were a terrible defense a season ago. They were starting more or less the same guys this year, and then two of their starters were out with injury. Their defensive secondary isn't,
secondary without already.
Yeah, it's just, they did exactly what they were, but they didn't just have success in the passing game, they did have success in the running game, so they were able to move the ball. I liked on offense how the threat moved from player to player. It was John Brown early on. Then we got to see some Darren Fells. And then down the stretch, it was Larry Fitzgerald. You kind of see how the adjustments the Saints make and then the adjustments that the Cardinals make to respond. And what did you end up having? You ended up with Fitz having a really good game. You had John Brown having a solid game. I mean, he tailed off there at the end. But, I mean, what that ended up happening is they, you know, the Saints changed their game plan. Darren Fells had you know, the best tight end game that the Cardinals have had since 1989 with Rob Awalt. And I remember, I do remember that happening with Rob Awalt. That's only for the most faithful of Cardinals fans who remember back in the first couple of years when they actually
I was 3. I don't know.
Yeah,
remember.
Just stop it. You stop it, you little young one. I remember it. But it was back in the day. The Cardinals had two very promising tight ends in Jay Novacek and Rob Awalt. They both left after 1989 and ended up on the Cowboys on those teams, and ever since it's been bad to Freddie Jones, who was okay. And, you know, I'm not going to get too excited after one game because tight ends don't get a lot of production in the office, especially when you've got the weapons that the Cardinals have now. But there was just so much offensively you really liked. I mean, there really isn't anything to complain about offensively except for a couple of breakdowns in pass protection. Early on, Carson Palmer was kept clean. He looked comfortable. He looked sharp. Andre Ellington looked explosive. There was, I mean, there's not really much other than just nitpicking that you can complain about what happened offensively.
No, and I think, like I said, my biggest complaint was with, you know, Bruce Arians going Bruce Arians in, you know, kind of the midway through the first quarter through the second quarter where he kind of forgot about the run game. And I mean, that was honestly my biggest complaint, and he came out and corrected that in the second half, and I think it was something like 12 runs and 14 pass attempts in the second half, or 15, and then, you know, in the first half it was something like 8 runs for the running backs and 20 pass attempts. So, you know, that's where, you know, I think you saw the stagnation of the offense, and now, you know, you saw in the second half, you saw it kind of wake up and open up, and I think what that does is allow them to kind of, you know, as you said, work through different options. All of a sudden, you know, they have to respect the run game because it's actually not just a threat, but it's being used. And then you go from there that you have, you know, John Brown being double covered a lot of times. So that's keeping Larry Fitzgerald and Darren Fells and J.J. Nelson in single coverages. Oh, and then, by the way, you have David Johnson coming out of the backfield. You know, it's just, it just opens so much up, whereas, you know, in that quarter to quarter and a half where it was mostly them dropping back and throwing the ball, that's all of a sudden where you saw the, you know, like I said, the stagnation and the team kind of looking out of sorts, and where New Orleans was able to get back in the game for a little bit before, you know, you don't want to call it a blowout because it was close until the end, and we saw with New York, if you don't complete that pass to David Johnson, or if for some reason he drops that pass, then everybody's screaming at Bruce Arians, why did you throw the ball and give the ball back to Drew Brees and stop the clock? But, you know, it worked, and then all of a sudden the score was much, much different, so...
Well, and you see the Cardinals have actually been, if you look at their wins over the last couple of years, they're kind of good at that, where they start quick, they lull, but then they get big plays late in the game. And that's kind of how it happened. Let's look at the other side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball. And before, I want to temper this immediately. If you look at the yardage, the Cardinals turned out to be trash offensively, if you just look at the yardage. However, I want to make sure everyone understands this. The Cardinals had a very good offensive defensive game. First and foremost, they kept the Saints out of the end zone except for once, and that was really a special teams gaffe because the defense had done their job. So they limited them to one touchdown. They limited the Saints offense to 19 points. This is a Saints offense that for the last 9 seasons has been top 6 in yardage games. So they gain a ton of yards. So this is, we're talking, they play all sorts of defenses. They play good teams, they get bad defenses, and they have been one of the top, in fact, I think 6 of the last 9 years, they have been the top gaining offense. And they've been a top 10 scoring offense for 6 of those 9 years. And the lowest that they've been in scoring has been 12th. And the Cardinals held them for 19 points. So, before we get all bent out of shape on the yards, let's look at the actual thing. And this is what happened last season. They keep teams out of the end zone. They make big plays. Now we can start nitpicking some of the other things. And we went, you see, one thing that's back after at least one game. The running game. The Saints don't have a great running game yet. But they held them to only 54 yards rushing. That's how the Cardinals have made their success over the last 2 seasons, until the last half of last season when things sort of fell apart.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the defense and what the defense was able to do, it just, as you said, it was dominant against the run, and then the pass defense, you know, it's just such a, this is why I was texting a couple friends, mutual friends of ours, this today, and what it is with the Saints, and what really happens is, the Saints killed them, you know, short. That was obvious. Everybody saw that. But what they were doing is they're running those outside guys, you know, first off, the Cardinals are in, you know, they do a lot of man coverage on the outside and blitz from the inside. So what they were doing was they were running that same coverage and on those mans, on the man-to-man outside or in the slot or, you know, on the corners, they're dropping. And then all of a sudden the safeties are, you know, shading to whatever side Peterson's not on or Dale Buchanan's blitzing or, you know, somebody's blitzing. And then all of a sudden the back's coming out. And what they were doing was they were going to the side where single coverage without the shade was and then throwing short. And then all of a sudden those running backs only have to be, you know, a slow-footed linebacker or a guy that was really, I don't want to say out of control, but was really all over the field, but not necessarily in the best way in Dale Buchanan yesterday. And that all of a sudden opened up those huge lanes for after the catch. And that's kind of what happened. And so then when they got down into the red zone, well, all of a sudden the corners don't have to go, you know, 30 yards down the field before they turn around to see that the running back has the ball and is running at them. What's ending up happening is, oh, they're just, you know, they're going 5 yards and then they're seeing something that doesn't look right and they're going back. And so that's, you know, part of it. And so, like I said, it was death by a thousand cuts. It wasn't necessarily bad pass defense per se as much as it was. The Saints knew that the Cardinals were going to play a lot of man outside and they were taking all the opportunity they could to send those guys deep, make them respect those, you know, getting down the field and then taking advantage in the flats with the running backs and the screen game and, you know, just flares and things like that. And so what ends up happening is they get a ton of yardage and that's not unexpected in situations like that. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be shocked if it was something that happened again against the Bears. It's just about making sure that when that does happen, like you said, they hold them to field goals or they force a turnover or, you know, something of that nature.
Hey,
they
and don't. With Jay Cutler coming up, yeah. Turnovers.
Yeah, and that's what, and you know what, and he doesn't get enough credit when he does well, but he sure does take a beating when he struggles. And I thought Patrick Peterson really showed up yesterday. He was physical with Brandon Cooks and kept him off his routes, and he got beat the one time, and outside of that, it was, you know, it was an impressive show by Peterson in his ability to really be physical at the line of scrimmage and make a difference in that game. I think, you know, when you just look at the Cardinals defense, it's basically still an unknown because, like you said, the Saints run game isn't great. They got killed through the air, statistically speaking, but they didn't really give up any points. I mean, like you said, 19 points, that's going to rank right around,
that's going to be like top 10, top 12 type defense if that's something that they can do.
And so, you know, I think that's what you're going to have to live with because even with Alex Okafor's two sacks, there still wasn't a ton of pressure on the quarterback. And they did have some deep drops and some chances to, you know, pin their ears back, especially when they were up and weren't able to, you know, really gain any pressure. But it didn't really matter. So, you know, like you said, it's nitpicking. But it is something to watch going forward. You know, was it just the fact that the Saints have maybe a top, you know, 7 or 8 quarterback in the NFL still, or is it something just to watch going forward? And I think honestly, next week, you know, game against the Bears is going to answer a lot of those questions because I still don't know what to think of the Bears, so maybe it won't answer any questions.
Well, true. Defensively for me, I really, and Bruce Arians explained that the problems they had with running backs, now we have to take that with a grain of salt. It was simply, there were players there in that first game, they got a little, when they got after the blitz, they got excited about the quarterback and they just missed assignments. They forgot to cover the running back, and that was probably more Buchanan than anything else, being the young player that he is. If they can contain that, that's really going to... That's good. If they can really contain that, because, I mean, nearly half of the Saints' passing yards came off of dump-offs and screens. Some of those were design screens, and some of them were just there was an outlet in the flat simply because that side of the field got open. You mentioned Patrick Peterson. I want to emphasize that. Patrick Peterson looked really – yes, he got beat on one play. One play, and there are people talking about Brandon Cooks as becoming this star with Drew Brees. And it took a perfect throw from Brees to get him there, too. So Patrick Peterson played a fantastic game, but he wasn't the only one. Jerod Powers was making plays right and left as well. And I thought he would have trouble because he was going to be matched up with the bigger receiver, and we've seen, at least in training camp, when facing a guy or a more physical, bigger guy like a Michael Floyd, Jerod Powers gets his lunch handed to him. But he played really well. And it's the safety. I mean, and then they have like all the safeties on the field all the time. So you got a good feeling from what they did. Powers got the defended ball that then ended up the interception for Rashad Johnson. Rashad doing so many things on the field. It's just there's lots to like. Alex Okafor even picked up a couple of sacks, though. As you can attest to this, what were the types of sacks he got? They were cleanup sacks. It wasn't a straight, he beat his man and got the quarterback. It was, there was pressure from a few places, including him. Breeze scrambles a little bit. Okafor grabs him.
Yep. And that's something you and I have talked about before. That's who he is as a pass rusher. That's not a bad thing at all.
No.
Like that's a really important thing to have. That's what gets guys like Pernell McPhee paid $9 million a year by the Chicago Bears. But you know, it will in games with a better offensive line. But not next week because the Bears' offensive line is awful. But you know, in other games, it could become an issue where they're not able to generate a consistent pass rush. But he's a guy that's going to, like you said, he's going to clean those up, and he's going to do them consistently well, and that's what makes a huge difference in the game. Is when you, because before, the Cardinals didn't even have anybody to clean up, or if they, you know, when they had John Abraham that one year, they didn't really have anybody to clean up still. They had, you know, to blitz Darrell Washington, and Calais Campbell was kind of the cleanup guy, but you know, this is a defense that's close to being putting it all together. Obviously, there's still, like I said, the concern about the pass rush, but it's a very talented is probably an understatement. So, but it's a very well put together defense on every level, and that's, you know, that's something in the NFL that's really hard to beat.
Let's talk about some of the smaller parts. Obviously, we need to look forward at least for probably this week, maybe the next three, with Andre Ellington on the bench. He's sitting out with another injury, and maybe this is what we're seeing. Maybe this is the player that Ellington is. He will be an impact player when he's healthy, but he won't always be healthy. How valuable does that pickup of Chris Johnson suddenly become? Because now you have a guy who's used to being a workhorse. And now they'll have to change things a little bit in terms of skill set. But how do you think... I personally don't think that the running game will suffer very much because... Go ahead.
I think it's going to be better. And I don't mean better than big play. Johnson probably still has some big play left in him. But he's got a lot of tread on the tire, or, you know, off the tires. I think that's the correct term. But he's got a lot of wear on the tires. There you go. And, you know, so I think what's going to happen is I think you're going to get a more consistent run game. So as opposed to, you know, needing that, what was it, those two, like, 15-plus yard runs that Ellington had to, you know, to get his, I think he was at like 6 yards per carry average. You're going to get a lot of four and a half yard per carries, and that's okay. You know, that's keeping an offense on time, and that's allowing, you know, the the script to kind of just flow throughout the game.
And it allows Johnson to do what he's used to doing, and that's get into a rhythm. He's not nearly as effective as a reliever coming off the bench for a couple of plays. That's something that Stephon Taylor's able to do ably, or even Jonathan Dwyer could do. But the Cardinals haven't had that guy who could, in a limited amount of carries, have some sort of impact. And Johnson will be able to get his 15 to 20 carries with David Johnson getting a few. And David Johnson will get the treatment, I think, that Andre Ellington had in the first half of his first season, which is limited. Don't overload the rookie.
Yeah, and I think when Ellington does come back, we're going to just see kind of a shift of David Johnson down as opposed to Chris Johnson. And, you know, and I could be completely wrong. I was wrong about Ellington. I created the free Ellington hashtag 2 years ago. I was a big advocate of this is a guy that can be an every down back. I just didn't take into account the fact that dude's never healthy, like, at all.
And he had all sorts of foot injuries, and then, well, heck, when he was drafted, he had hamstring issues, so.
Yeah, he's had foot, ankle, I think knee, and hamstring injuries throughout his career. And that goes back to, like, I think his freshman year of college. I think every year in college he's had some type of, you know, leg injury. And so it's just a continuation of it. And it's not that he's he's fragile, because it's not the same injury over and over. It's a different injury all the time. And so maybe it's just the way he's built or something like that, but you just hope he can get healthy. Honestly, like, I don't want to see him pushed to get back. This is, as much as the NFL is a week-to-week thing, and you can't look ahead, I'd much rather have Andre Ellington the last 8 games of the season and going into the playoffs than the next 7 games and, you know, worrying about him getting beat up by teams like, you know,
the San Francisco Steelers and Seattle and the Rams.
And the Browns.
Oh, yeah. Because they have a very physical bunch of games coming up.
So, you know, I just, you want him healthy at the stretch run. And you want to give Johnson and Johnson the chance to kind of form a dynamic duo and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then when Ellington comes back, you know, or when he's ready, you insert him. If it is working, then you don't change anything. Or you just, you know, slowly, you know, change the dynamic, and maybe, like I said, David Johnson takes a little bit of a back seat for a couple weeks and lets Andre Ellington get back into it. You know, just little things like that. But I don't think it's going to really make a difference, to be completely honest. I think Chris Johnson's a veteran. You know, knock on wood, he's never had any, you know, I don't think he's ever missed a game in his career. So he's just a guy.
One game his rookie year.
Yeah, so exactly. That's just, you know, that's, we're talking about a guy that's missed at least, 3 games every year in his 2 years in the league, and now it's in 3, so versus a guy that's missed 1 game in 8 seasons in the NFL and has rushed for over 10,000 yards or close to 10,000 yards in that time frame. So consistency is kind of the name of the game in Chris Johnson, and I think that's what he'll be, and I think he's going to be a guy that gets you 65 yards a game on his, you know, 15 carries, and you're kind of just, okay, let's keep going.
That would be great.
Yeah. And maybe it's closer to 75 yards, and he's over 4 yards per carry, but I think, honestly, that's what he'll be, and like you said, that's going to be great for this offense, because it'll keep it on time and allow, you know, David Johnson to come in and do some special things like he did in the game. You know, the kid got 5 snaps and 1 touch. Like, I know we're all ready to proclaim him the savior of the running game, so to speak, but 5 snaps, 1 touch. Like,
they did target him one other time. They did target him one other time in the passing game, and that didn't go so well.
And I think, and you nailed it. Like, they're going to baby him along. You know, so maybe this week he gets 5 to 8 touches, or maybe even 10. Maybe gets in the double digits. But I wouldn't be shocked if Stephon Taylor got, you know, kind of that running back 2 carries type thing, as opposed to maybe not snaps, but just in terms of the carries and stuff like that.
Yeah, he becomes the reliever, and then they use David Johnson simply in a passing game, which where he can be, well, you know right away he can make a difference. But yep. Ted, the tight end position, you got Darren Fells with this big game. Let's go with that hyperbole. Is Darren Fells the answer at tight end?
You know, I don't think it matters. I think what he did and what he is doing as a run blocker is more important than that, you know, huge statistical game he has. You know, if anybody listens to this and wants to trying to get fantasy insights, don't pick up Darren Fells, because I don't think it's a week-to-week thing. I don't think it's an every-week thing. I think it's a week-to-week thing. I think it's something that when the situation dictates, and it dictated it this week, that he was the guy open on a lot of plays, because, like I said, they had a safety shading John Brown. They were playing very physical with Larry Fitzgerald and J.J. Nelson, and Michael Floyd was out. I mean, he got the start and played a couple snaps, but he was out for most of the game. So, you know, just I think it's just going to be whatever the situation dictates. If it's a good game for Darren Fells to get the ball, he'll get the ball. I think the only consistent thing you're going to see every week is going to be Chris Johnson, at least for the next 3.
John Brown
and Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry Fitzgerald, in terms of he's going to be the guy, like you said, in late game situations, on third downs, when they need 6 yards, he's going to be the guy. So,
let me give you a stat that I came across as I charted the game. You know where he got the bulk of his targets?
Between the 20s.
It was off play action. 4 of his 6 catches came on play action. And so they used
Carson
it.
Had like,
and that,
Carson
that,
had like, how many completions did he have off play action? And he had a couple, I remember. I think it was like 6 or 9 or something like that.
I don't know, but they used play action a little bit more than they have in the last couple of years. But 4 of Fitz's catches were on play action, I believe. That wide open play down the field where Fitz overthrew him, I believe that was play action. I have to go back and look at it. I think that was a play action as well. And so the way they were getting him open was the getting him the ball was basically off the running game. And he ran some really good routes. He made a catch and he got a quick catch and he was able to turn around quickly, go to the other way to pick up some yards. But it was a solid Fitz game. It wasn't a huge Fitz game, but, you know, if you get Fitz 80 yards receiving, you get John Brown 50 yards receiving, sometimes he's going to hit the 100, and he's the 82 yards that Fells is going to get is going to be 40, and it'll be at 90 for John Brown. So especially if any of you guys who listen are doing fantasy football, you are probably not going to like any of the Cardinals receivers except for maybe John Brown. John Brown, I'm going to tell you this, is the Cardinals' number one option on offense because he can do so many things. That doesn't mean he'll be the one who gets the ball the most. He's just the one that they kind of look for as route number one.
Yeah, he's the guy that's going to push the ball deep, you know, right now. So that's what they're, you know, doing right now is they're pushing the ball deep and they're trying to open up the field for the underneath stuff and they did that, and I think, like you said, John Brown's the only consistent threat in that passing game. I think Fitz is going to get, what do you have, 6 or 8? Do you have 6 this game?
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, you're talking about 6 for 86 or whatever it was. You know, obviously it's one game, but that's like 96 catches and 1,300 yards. Like, that's a phenomenal season. But that's still 5 and 60. You know, you're still right on pace for about 80 and 100 or 80 and 1,000. And you're talking about, you know, John Brown being a 1,000-yard receiver with 10 plus touchdowns. So having two, yeah, that's going to be big. So I think, you know, I think what Fells did was important in that game, because now it just gives another aspect for teams to have to recognize and, you know, kind of game plan for. Like, hey, we can't leave this Darren Fells guy open because he'll make us pay. He's not Rob Housler. He's not John Carlson, you know, who are going to drop catchable passes. Right now he is making it so it's difficult for other guys, you know, he's making it difficult for other teams to say, okay, we don't have to worry about the tight end position for the Cardinals, which has been kind of...
They can ignore. They really could just ignore.
Yeah, and so now all of a sudden, you know, they don't have to, they don't have to ignore the running game, which was happening, and now they don't, you know, or they can't ignore the running game, which was happening, and now they can't ignore the tight end. So all of a sudden, it, instead of it just being, oh, the Cardinals are loaded with weapons at wide receiver, no, they have a lot of talent all over the field, and so that's important.
If we talk about, if you look at the offensive line play we sort of talked about, the two players that got particular praise, and it came out in press conference with Bruce Arians, it came out in the radio interview Steve Keim did with Arizona Sports Monday morning, and I wrote about it on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, is Earl Watford and Jonathan Cooper really were worth the praise. Cooper played well. He had a couple of mistakes. He had the holding penalty. He got tossed on a play he was supposed to pull on. Watford got beat early on a couple of pressures. I think the stats say on Pro Football Focus is that he gave up. Was it? There's World Watford. One hit, and the only hit that Carson Palmer, that they get credited, that Carson Palmer getting hit once, and he gave up three pressures. Overall, 10 pressures out of, you know, 31 backdrops or dropbacks, and plus another two scrambles, so 33 dropbacks. And then you've got, you know, decent pressure. They ran the ball well, and it was good to see. Jonathan Cooper had a good game. And let's hope he doesn't get hurt. And Earl Watford playing a tackle position, which when he was drafted in the first two, who knew? I didn't even know he could play tackle. And he did an okay. I mean, Bobby Massey had games like this. He was essentially Bobby Massey.
Yeah, and that's something that you and I talked about in the offseason on a couple of the podcasts. But if Watford got the chance, I didn't think he was going to give the position up. And because he's at worst equal in the run game, and so if he's equal in the run game, he's going to eventually surpass him in pass protection. Like I said, he got beat early a couple times, but from there he really settled in and did a nice job against a guy that's talented.
Yes, he's had 20 sacks over the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's a very talented Pro Bowl 3-4 defensive end. And, you know, he's probably right below like Calais Campbell and Muhammad Wilkerson in that next tier of guys. You know, he's obviously nobody's J.J. Watt, but you know, he's probably right below those three, as you know, maybe number four or five on the scale of 3-4 defensive ends. And this is a guy, his first start ever, so you know, at a position he hasn't played until this year. Or still training camp this year. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be excited and impressed and hopeful that this continues, because all it does is just, it means that the transition next year, the transition already occurred. We were all hoping DJ Humphries was going to win the position. Like I said, he's Logan Thomas. You just put him out of your mind. You probably just don't want to see him this year. That's how it's going to go. But Earl Watford makes the transition from Bobby Massey, go from, okay, we'll have to figure it out in 2016, to, okay, we got 2016 figured out too. So let's just keep going. Let's just keep riding this train and see what happens.
And you look at the pass rush they had in terms of pressure. They got the two sacks by Okafor. Pro Football Focus credited the defense with two hits on Drew Brees and seven pressures. And they came from a lot of different places. Rodney Gunter had one, Calais Campbell, Kevin Minter, Alex Okafor had a pressure in addition to the sacks. Tyrann Mathieu once, Lamar Woodley once, and Marcus Golden once. We saw kind of If you look at the defense, they got pass rushing productivity from Alex Okafor. Lamar Woodley pushed the pocket. Marcus Golden, when he was in there, he became the guy for their dime pass defense, the guy that rushed the passer. He was all over the field. They got a lot of production from a lot of places. So I was really pleased to see how that went. I mean, it wasn't consistent pressure, and it wasn't, they didn't even move Breeze off his spot a lot, but it forced them to abandon, combined with the coverage, they weren't attacking down the field. And that's what Drew Breeze loves to do. He loves to attack down the field, and they kept him out of that completely.
Yeah, and like I said, he was death by 1,000 cuts, and that sucks from a statistical standpoint. But you know what? In the end, maybe those stats come into play later on, and you know that we'll get thrown at from, what is it, Football Outsiders and Pro Football Focus. Oh, that's why the Cardinals didn't win the Super Bowl, because you know they gave up 375 yards a game in passing, but. You know what? They gave up 19 points, so who cares? Like, the opposing off, it's not ideal, but they can gain 500 yards a game if they're only giving up 19 points, because that's going to put them in a very good group. And I found a stat. Sean Church had it. I knew Sean had it. Palmer was 5 of 6 for 119 yards and a touchdown on play action passes. So
four of those went to Larry.
Yeah, so the only one that didn't was the touchdown. So that, like you said, that's huge. I mean, if that, because they have to take account for the run game, all of a sudden that makes everybody else that much more viable. Like, I don't think people understand how important that is to the, not just the run game success, but the passing game success and what that can mean going forward for this team.
Looking forward to the Chicago Bears this weekend. I have to look at, they don't have the elite edge rusher. They do have a Pernell McPhee, a guy the Cardinals wanted to go after. They defensively still have a lot to, they definitely aren't there defensively. And offensively, they have an offensive line that is not great. They do have a very good, talented running back in Matt Forte and a quarterback who, when he is on, Jay Cutler is as good as anyone, but he's also prone to turning the ball over, especially with pressure in his face. And he is a guy who will test his windows. What do you expect, what do you hope to see from the Cardinals this weekend? After what you saw on Sunday, what do you think we can see on this upcoming Sunday now that's on the road?
I think you start with realizing that it is just that, it's on the road. So, you know, let's not expect a blowout. Road blowouts are rare in the NFL. Even with bad teams, it's a rare thing. So, you know, if the Cardinals don't blow out the Bears by 2 touchdowns, it's not a bad thing. I think you want to see consistency on offense again. Same type of thing, because like you said, the Bears' defense just isn't very good. Now, granted, the Packers are the best offense in the NFL. I don't even care if Jordy Nelson's hurt. They're still the best offense in the NFL. But they did a lot in the passing game, and they did a lot in the running game, and they made it look really easy. So hopefully the Cardinals can mimic that from last year or from last week. And then defensively, I think you want to see them again take advantage of a less than talented offensive line. I think it starts, you know, it started last week. The Saints offensive line is not very talented, and they get another offensive line in the Bears that just isn't very talented. So I think you want to see a continued domination on the ground. Like you said, Matt Forte is one of the top 5 running backs in the league, and that's not just from a fantasy standpoint. He's just, you know, he is what we all hope David Johnson becomes. So that's huge praise. So maybe this is a game where they give up 100 yards rushing, or maybe it's not. Maybe this is a game where you see continued domination against the run, and and then we'll see what happens in the pass game, because I think Dayone and maybe Mentor, I'm not sure, and Tony Jefferson, and I think all of those guys are going to be kind of aware. Okay, well,
that will be a point. Let's put it this: that will be a point of emphasis this week in practice. Yes. Assignment on the blitz to make sure that somebody peels back and covers the back out of the backfield.
Yeah, because it's a little. Mark Ingram's a nice back. You know, don't get me wrong. Mark Ingram's a good back, but yeah, you'd much rather have Matt Forte out in the open field if you're an opposing team going, you know, or an offense, running an offense. You'd much rather have Matt Forte out in the open field with the ball in his hand than Mark Ingram. So I think that's how it, you know, like you said, that's going to be a point of emphasis this week. So assignments, you know, make sure, don't get excited. Just make sure you finish the plays and make good plays. And I think that's big this week. And a commitment to the run game. I'm going to preach that all season long. Everybody's going to get tired of me talking about it and saying it. But again, look how efficient the offense was when they really focused on that run game. And I thought it was. I think that's just what you want to see as it continues. Is that the Arizona Cardinals are a team. You know, I don't expect a 50-50 split, but if you're closer to 40. You know, 40 rushing, 60 passing, I think.
That's 50-50 in the NFL anymore anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's going to make the Arians offense, which is one of the least efficient in the NFL statistically, you know, over the last couple of years, become much more efficient in what they're doing. So, and we saw that in game one, especially in the second half. So I think that's what you look for this week.
And that'll bring us to a close of our All Cardinals show for Revenge of the Birds Radio. I do not yet have anything lined up for a Bears preview. I will send an email out tonight, Tuesday night, to see if I can't get something to sit down and record with somebody over at WindyCityGridiron.com, our SB Nation Chicago Bears blog. Talk to them either Thursday or Friday, perhaps. But in any case, we will, at minimum, we'll be back on the air. We'll back in your download. We will record our next show Tuesday night of next week after what is hopefully another Arizona Cardinals win. And hopefully they start the season 2-0. I wouldn't mind seeing another 31 spot on the board. But it is the road. So we will see. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio signing off. I'm Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. And thank you for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.